Hot.
Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rouleau.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio. This program gets behind the environmental, social, political, educational, spiritual, and health decisions that affect our lives and futures, yet are not always determined by us, but rather by politics, business, and other self-interest groups. Investigative in nature, we go where mainstream stops. As a leader in the healthcare and patient safety world, I now expose current and relevant harms and charms that either endanger or improve our health, our freedom, our privacy, and our sanity. Most of us simply don't have time to pay attention to decisions that are being made on our behalf, decisions made by people who may have less than altruistic motives. And often we don't speak up because we are not aware. Well, this program changes that by being the voice for informed choice. I am your hostess, Pat Rouleau. So happy that we're together once again. And as usual, I have lots to share today, so let's get started, shall we? Cracking the codes. Did you know that hospitals use secret codes to pass information between the staff? These are meant to be a secret, as they don't want to alarm the patients, the families, and visitors. Perhaps you've heard some of these types of codes while shopping in places like, say, Walmart. Code C means customer assistance needed. Code C in housewares. Code C in housewares. In hospitals, for example, often code red stands for fire. Code blue for an adult medical emergency. Code white for a pediatric medical emergency. Code pink for infant abduction. Code purple for child abduction. Yellow for bomb threat. Code gray for a combative person. Silver for a person with a weapon and or a hostage situation. Code orange for a hazardous material spill release, and so on. In some hospitals, code black is for a bomb threat and code yellow is for a lockdown. In Ohio, I've heard that code gray is severe weather and code violet is a violent combative patient. Maybe because violet and violent are similar words? Dr. Brown is a code word often used in hospitals to alert security staff to a threat to personnel. If a doctor or nurse is in danger from a violent patient or a non-staff member, they can page Dr. Brown to their location and the security staff will rush to their aid. Hopefully there's not a bunch of Dr. Browns in the hospital. Some hospitals use Dr. Strong or Dr. Heavy. And in some facilities, code brown means someone didn't make it to the bathroom in time, if you get what I mean. Now, for some odd reason, these codes are not nationally universal, meaning one code may mean one thing in Hospital A and another in Hospital B. Heaven help the doctor who may travel between hospitals and get all confused with the various color combinations. Well, what caused me to get so colorful with this topic is an article by Stephen Wilkins, a former hospital executive who writes a very interesting blog called Mind the Gap. And I thought it would be of interest to you. It's titled, Why Can't Patients Call a Code Gray on Disrespectful Hospital Staff? He says, if you have ever been in a hospital or watched a TV show about hospitals, you have no doubt heard an emergency page being called over a loudspeaker. Having a recent stay in hospital 24/7 with my sick wife for the last 3 weeks, I am amazed at the variety of codes. There are shock alerts, brain attacks, and code blues with and without doctors present. But my all-time favorite is the code gray. A code gray is called by a hospital staff on unruly or combative patients, family, or visitors. Turns out I happen to know a bit about code gray, he says. Not too long ago, an employee of the hospital where my wife was having a CT scan called a code gray on me while I was waiting for my wife. The manager of a room in the hospital I wrote about in an earlier blog, called The Scariest Place in the Hospital, found out that I wrote the piece that evidently got her in hot water and decided on getting some payback on me. It was a very embarrassing experience for everyone involved. I was embarrassed when, like out of a Frankenstein movie, the angry villagers, the hospital staff, and the local law enforcement descended upon me with pitchforks and torches. The manager of the scariest place kept demanding that I stop writing about them using my laptop and security should call a code gray. I needed to be expelled from the hospital immediately. It was embarrassing for my very sick wife, who was wheeled out of radiology, to see the assembled masses calling me to be forcibly removed from the hospital. Most of all, it was embarrassing for the hospital, who days later apologized for the unfortunate incident and rescinded the criminal trespass warrant filed by the hospital against me. Since that experience, I found myself staying 24/7 with my wife in another hospital in the city where we live. And I was amazed at the number of code grays that were being called. One was even called on a patient a few doors down from my wife. I can't help but admit that, deep inside, I was secretly cheering for the patient. Now I realize that the code gray is intended to protect the hospital staff, but as I discovered, it is always used by some to threaten patients and family and visitors who hospital employees do not feel are behaving as they should. Which leads me to the point of this piece. Patients and their family members should be able to call a code against hospital employees, including physicians, displaying stupidity, rudeness, disrespect, and surliness. There were any number of times during my wife's most recent hospital stay where I wanted to tell off the nurses who felt compelled to disrespect my wife's request to close her patient door upon entry. You see, my wife is frail and preferred to keep the room warm. And hospitals, after all, are very cold places. One nurse told her, "I will close the door when I'm ready. I need to do her vitals and give her medications first." I wish I could have been able to have the hospital operator call a code-insensitive employee in room 515. Or take the doctor, who would sneak into my wife's hospital room at 5:30 a.m., wake my sleeping wife and me, and ask how she's feeling. My God, where's my right to call a code bad experience in room 515? While I am on this subject, why can't hospitals provide interactive patient satisfaction surveys and code buttons via the patient TV channels or in room iPads instead of forcing you to request a form from the staff before they can file a complaint? And another one of my favorite experiences was when my wife would ask for her lab test results, only to be told that it was against hospital policy to actually give patients a hard copy of such information. The charge nurse had to authorize such requests. And if patients wanted their lab results in writing, they needed to go to the medical records. They weren't on my wife's patient portal yet, since the doctor had not seen them yet. Time for a code, why can't I get my own damn data? You get my point. Now don't get me wrong. I know hospitals are busy places. I know nurses and doctors are busy. Heck, my wife is an RN herself and worked in that same hospital. But frankly, this hospital, and others just like it around the country, pay too much lip service to patient-centered care and patient experiences. Hospital administrators, of which I was once one, should be forced to stay overnight in the hospital for a week just to shadow the experiences of sick patients. Rounding just doesn't provide the same level of experience as having to endure an overnight stay in a hospital. One can't help but feel that the patients and their family are viewed by some hospitals and their employees as the enemy. Otherwise, why would the onerous practices described above and many others which I could cite be allowed to happen? Hospitals and their employees are paid to serve patients, not to ignore, disrespect, or treat them like stupid children. Hospitals are lucky that most patients are either too sick or too afraid of retribution from hospital employees to complain too much. I contend that this fear of retribution, juxtaposed by the fact that there are also a lot of really great people working in hospitals, that keep most patients from saying nasty things about their hospital stay. But let's face it, one rotten apple can, and often does, spoil the entire patient experience. But most patients are way too patient to say anything negative. Until patients feel free to express their honest opinions about hospitals, I stand by my earlier suggestion. Let patients and their families have the right to call a code for untoward staff and physician behavior. Now it's me talking. So what do you think of that idea? Should there be a special code for patients? A bell to ring, an alarm to pull? Do we as patients need a code fuchsia? Code tickle me pink? Code burnt sienna? Code raw umber? Oh, that reminds me. and I would love for you to share your healthcare or hospital experience with me in writing. Just send us your story or your thoughts about your experience as a patient, a family member, or an advocate, and we will share it on our website as a way to identify trends, to vent, compliment, suggest solutions, and hopefully make positive changes. Now, there are only a few rules. First, do not name specific hospitals or people. We are not about bashing specifics. We're more about telling the stories. Instead, use Hospital A or Rehab B or Assisted Living Home C, or use Dr. Danger or Nurse Nice or something similar. Next, indicate if you'd like us to use your real name and city or if you'd prefer to be anonymous. Either way is fine with us. We will not edit or make any changes to your submission, and all you have to do is email your story to me at pat@speakupandstayalive.com. pat@speakupandstayalive.com. And let me know your favorite color code. And stay with me, as later in the show, I have a shocking hospital code to share with you that will stop you in your tracks. You probably don't know about this, but your life may depend upon it. Don't miss it.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I'd love you to be a part of my world. It's a world filled with amazing people, interesting and engaging ideas, all related to the preservation of this great planet of ours. We interview people from all over the world about topics that I know will interest you, and we educate people in fun, informative ways and inspire them to take small steps so that together we can make a big impact. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and become a part of our world.
She is a dear friend of mine with lots to share with you. She even has a book, and you can reach her by phone at 520-230-3977. That's 520-230-3977. Or visit her website, mrsgreensworld.com.
Today, more and more people who are in quote-unquote normal families, both parents have to work. So care that's needed pushes down to the children.
Hi, I'm Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we explore aging and caregiving in every generation. Listen to a brand new episode each week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, go to agewyz.com.
If you or someone you know is in the caregiver role, check out her website and purchase her book. Visit agewyz.com, and that's spelled AGEWYZ, or give her a call, 800-590-2129. That's 800-590-2129.
This is Susan Marie from The Dougie Diva Show, the show for animal lovers. Please join my canine co-host, the Dougie Diva herself, Miss Olive, and I as we bring the experts in the pet and animal world right to you each week on Speak Up Talk Radio, or please visit us at our website at thedoggiediva.com. Have a great Diva Week, everyone.
That's right. If you want to learn more about how to keep your pets safe and happy, tune into my favorite pet show, The Doggy Diva Show, found at our very own speakuptalkradio.com, or visit doggydiva.com.
Hot, 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 hot. Bring the heat.
And now, back to the show.
As promised, we are about to continue our quest to become code crackers. No codes, slow codes, and show codes. While researching hospital color codes, I came upon this little known code called the slow code, or the show code, or the Hollywood code, the light blue code, the partial code. And it refers to the practice in a hospital or other medical center to purposely respond slowly or incompletely to a patient in cardiac arrest, particularly in situations where CPR is of no medical benefit or where a medical response is medically futile, but it's faked for the comfort of the patient's family and loved ones. Slow codes and show codes are forms of symbolic resuscitation. A slow code is an act performed by the healthcare providers that resembles CPR, yet is not the full effort of resuscitation, while a show code is a short and vigorous resuscitation performed to benefit the family while minimizing harm to the patient. Sometimes a patient with severe dementia or a terminal disease such as cancer goes into cardiac arrest. The doctors think that resuscitation would be useless, that an aggressive intervention would provide only a temporary reprieve or perhaps more suffering. And when the patient or his or her representative has not provided a do not resuscitate order, that is when doctors and staff may call a code, but they'll respond slowly. And this refers specifically to CPR and the do not resuscitate form known as the DNR. CPR stands for cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and CPR uses mouth-to-mouth or machine breathing and chest compressions to restore the work of the heart and the lungs when someone's heart or breathing is stopped. It is an emergency rescue technique that was developed to save the life of people who are generally in good health. Advanced CPR offers additional interventions, which can include intubation, which is the insertion of a tube into the mouth or nose to help with breathing, mechanical ventilation, which is the use of a machine to move air into the lungs, medications given through a vein, drugs can help with blood pressure regulation, heart rhythm, and blood flow, and cardioversion, the use of a controlled electric shock to change heart rhythm. Now, your choice of code status is not included in your living will or any of your other advanced medical directives. It refers only to resuscitation. Unlike other advanced directives that are written and signed by you as the individual, such as the living will or the durable power of attorney for healthcare, a DNR, the Do Not Resuscitate order, must be completed and signed by the doctor or other healthcare provider, such as a hospice nurse practitioner. Once completed, that DNR order is added to your medical record. So DNR, or a no code, does not mean do not treat. You are not saying that you don't want everything that can be done if you have a DNR order in place. You may want other life-sustaining treatments, just not CPR. The only thing that a DNR order means is that if you suffer a cardiac arrest, you are not to have CPR, and that is valid for that particular hospital admission. Now, I read this sad piece at allnurses.com that highlights what I'm saying here. It was under the heading of Great Nursing, Nursing Issues on Patient Safety, called The Slow Code by The Commuter, a senior moderator, December 5th, 2012. This person writes, I've been a nurse for only 7 years. However, certain events and situations will remain embedded in my memory for the rest of my life. One of those events took place during my first year of nursing practice when I was employed at a long-term care facility. A code blue was announced through the overhead paging system, along with a room number. Since the facility had no designated code team, any healthcare employee who were located nearby were expected to respond. I dutifully ran to the room and entered a scene that was filled with disorder. An elderly male patient was lying on the floor adjacent to his bed in a supine position. His body was cyanotic, but still warm. His nurse states that he has been chatting with him less than 30 minutes ago. No rise and fall of his chest was noted. All pulses were absent. This clinically dead man was a full code, yet the multiple people in the room were moving with a disturbingly unhurried pace. I immediately started chest compressions. A nurse with more than 20 years of experience glanced at me with a smile and said sternly, "Give it up. Don't waste your energy. Wait until the EMS gets here, then act as if you're doing something in front of them." She ended her statement with a quiet giggle as the house supervisor stood over me, grinned, and nodded in agreement. I continued pounding on the man's chest and could feel his osteoporotic ribs cracking with each compression. EMS personnel and the city fire rescue squads arrived less than 10 minutes later to take over the resuscitation efforts. Approximately 30 seconds before the EMS staff entered the room, my coworkers began putting on the show and pretended to exert an all-out effort to save the patient, aka the show code or the Hollywood code. Since EMS has their own documentation, I suppose my peers wanted to appear busy to avoid potential liability later down the line. There was a bit more to that, but that's the end of what I'm going to read that this nurse wrote. So I have to ask, Do situations arise where a slow code would ever be justified? Are slow codes ethical? What if the patient was being kept alive by technology alone? As a moral decision, should he or she be allowed to die? Or what if the chronic disease the patient suffered from was beyond the resources of internal medicine and the use of technology to prolong the patient's life was a waste of time and effort? Or what if the patient specifically requested no such intervention? Shouldn't the patient decide how she or he wants to live or die? Then again, if the patient has decided that he or she wants everything done, the hospital staff should fulfill that request. Obviously, lots of moral, ethical, and legal ramifications to the slow code. If a slow code or a show code is performed, is that documented in the patient's chart? Also a note that some hospitals have policies stating that do not resuscitate patients are not to be admitted to the intensive care units. More than likely, you would not be told of this policy, and the patient is sent to a floor with a lower level of care. And in order to be treated, you would need to be moved to a hospital that has no such policy. So I guess we should ask your physician about the policies at your local hospitals. And let me throw this into the mix, the chemical code. A chemical code means that a patient wants to be treated with medications only. In some hospitals, this means that no other procedures, CPR, insertion of tubes, invasive procedures, or other therapies are to be used. But the problem with this approach is that most medications cannot be given to the patient effectively without using these two procedures. So it sounds like there's just so much confusion about these slow codes, no codes, show codes, Hollywood codes. Slow codes point to two failures. One is a failure on the part of the medical staff to communicate with the family and the patient. Every doctor or nurse should ask the patient right up front about their current wishes for CPR and execute a DNR form. And for heaven's sakes, explain it well. Don't just ask, do you have a DNR? Who knows what that means? Most people do not know that it only refers to CPR. Have the conversation with both the patient and the family members so no one has to play God. And the second failure is a failure on your part as the patient, not to have educated yourself and your family about your wishes for end-of-life care. Slow code stresses the need for you to have a conversation based on a sound understanding of care choices and the realities that you may face at the end of life. Remember, the DNR orders, the do not resuscitate orders, are a physician's order. The physician must be involved to write it and change it. And the health personnel can only follow a DNR order if they know one exists. So therefore, it's important to notify your doctors, nurses, caregivers, and family members if you prefer to avoid CPR. Today's conversation about slow codes clearly indicates the need for more and better end-of-life conversations between ourselves, family members, and healthcare providers. Why allow someone else to make this final decision for you? Talk about the slow code or the Hollywood code today. Slow code is an element of end-of-life care in this country. The public is largely unaware of the practice. It's often imposed upon patients without their consent or knowledge. There are no laws governing it, and research have collected no data. It's like the Wild West. So I have a few suggestions. The first is to have all of your other advanced directives in place, power of attorney for healthcare decisions, your living will, and so on. And finally, unless you'd like your final breath to be likened to a Hollywood production, give this some thought today. Have conversations now and insist upon full disclosure about your diagnosis. Demand informed consent and real understanding between you and your healthcare providers at the very onset of each and every hospital admission. Talk about the do not resuscitate form and your choices. You may not want CPR or chemicals and prefer to pass naturally. That's your choice. You may want all measures taken at all cost. That is also your choice. And no one other than you should be able to make it. No codes, slow codes, and show codes? Now you know. Right now, it's time for our weekly author spotlight, a favorite segment of the program where I tease you with a sneak peek into a recent author interview. If you love to read, you'll find plenty of fresh and fabulous authors at our very own radio network, speakuptalkradio.com. So take a listen, then head to the website to hear the entire 30-minute interview. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. So, let's take a listen. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today, I have the honor of sharing an author who has quite a personal story to tell. He is John Halfley. John has had the opportunity to share his story on radio and at prisons, prison ministry workshops, and churches throughout Illinois. He was the keynote speaker for Christian Library International's Advanced Light Dinners in Atlanta, Georgia, and Raleigh in Charlotte, North Carolina. He is also the author of the book, Therefore I Have Hope, founder of the Prodigal One Ministry, and writes a weekly blog titled Beyond the Pigs. John will soon be releasing videos illustrating the connection between biblical scenarios and his own personal experiences. He lives in East Peoria, Illinois, with his wife Julie and his sons John and Nick. And I know his message will move you, so welcome to the network, John.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
Me too. As I told you before we went on air, you were so kind to send me a copy of your book, and I reread it again this morning, and it looks like it's been attacked by more readers than just myself, because I read it twice, and every time I turned back the corners of pages that I wanted to revisit. So hopefully today I'll have the opportunity to talk about some of those dog-eared pages. But before we get into your book, I think it's very important for you to share your story, which for the most part is your book, but briefly, take us on your journey.
Well, my trouble started. I was born in a great family, great Christian family, and my problem was when I started living half in the world and the other half in the Word. You know, it's just one of those things where I got so deep into my sin, I just couldn't recover from it, and I ended up pleading guilty to one count mail fraud and ended up going to prison for 25 months.
It's quite a tale that you tell in your story. What then was the catalyst, if there was one, that caused you to write about this?
Well, I was never one to, writing a book was the farthest thing from my mind. I was never one to write. I was a D-minus English student throughout college. I just never had any interest in it. But, you know, I was sitting in a cell one day after I was incarcerated, and shortly after, and prompted by the Holy Spirit, I just began to write. And I had no idea what the story was going to be about because I had no idea what was ahead for me and my family. But, you know, it was time for me to start trusting God instead of trusting myself. And so I just began to write. And, you know, God's brought people since my release to clean it up, to make it a better read. And, you know, now I'm satisfied for where it's at now at this stage of my life.
Mm-hmm. No, I imagine it was very cathartic yet painful to revisit that and put it on paper.
Well, it was also healing, you know, you know, something that just kind of struck me the other day is my two sons, both in college at the time, they helped me edit it. And, you know, and I wanted to move forward so bad because it's so difficult to do anything once you're out of prison. I mean, it's still hard to find a job. And, you know, you get the feeling that you'll write a book and then all of a sudden that's all that's going to be needed and your life's back on the, you know, you're back moving forward. But my sons were good enough to edit it and help me edit it. And I tell you, you know, it had to be painful for them. And it's just kind of hitting me just recently after 2 or 3 years that, you know, what fine young men they were, to do that. And, you know, they could have went the other way when this all happened, too. You know, I really let my sons and my wife down, but, you know, they all stuck with me. And for that, I owe them everything. But it's been a real healing process, I think, for everybody.
Sure, for your family as a whole. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, you're complimenting your sons, but there's got to be a look back to you and how you and your wife raised them for them to be able to hang in there with you, as you say, and to sit with you and edit that book. I mean, there's a lot of positive family dynamic that obviously went on prior to this.
Yeah, we've been a very close family. We did everything together. And that's the thing. You know, in my story, when I went into the federal courtroom, I thought it was going to be to determine how much I'd embezzled. But instead, I was immediately incarcerated in the county jail, immediately, which doesn't happen very often. And so I was looking at 25 months away from a family that I'd never been more than 3 or 4 days away their whole lives. So we were really blindsided by this. Never saw it coming. But and then after that, as the story tells, 4 months in the county jail, and then I was transferred 750 miles away to a high-security prison, which, again, it just doesn't happen. And so I didn't see my family for 25 months. My wife had to work 6 days a week just to put food on the table. So, but again, you know, all glory to God because he kept us together and my family, of course.
Right.
It's been real easy for them to just turn tail and run, but they stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. And that must have felt good to you. And you must have had quite a lot of strength in your faith for you not to just be angry, because as I was reading it, I was feeling angry, thinking, wow, this is the first time this person's ever done anything wrong. Here you were shackled at that hearing and brought to high security and never really understood why. And I guess I'm interested, how did the anger stay in the background?
Well, again, that was a process of writing the book also, was working through some of that, because the question kept coming up is, when I was in Oklahoma City, was, why are you here? You know, why are you here? From the guards, from the, you know, everybody was saying, why are you here? What's a person in Illinois doing in this prison? And so, you know, you do wonder. But so the first, I think the part of the book started out as a tell-all, get even. But a good pastor friend of mine, he helped me edit the first edit. And he came to me one night and he said, you know, John, this is about your relationship with God. He said, it's not, you look like you're scapegoating. And I tell you, it really hit me right square. And, you know, what am I really trying to do going forward? I did something wrong. So I put myself in that position. I hurt a lot of people. I put myself in that position. And another thing is if God wanted to stop it at any time, he could have stopped it. But sometimes, things that are meant to be bad, God can intend for good. And I believe this is what's happened. My book's been in, hundreds of books have been sent into prisons. Christian Library International, who you spoke about in the introduction, just gave me position on their board. So there's been a chance to share my story in all kinds of places. So I wouldn't have this story had the system not been manipulated, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in coincidences, but again, God chose to turn it to good. So, and that's what I want my story to be for people that, you know, maybe they don't feel, they feel hopeless. And they can use my story till they have stories of their own. You know, in Oklahoma City, you probably read, I did a lot of suicide watches.
Mm-hmm.
Hopeless situation. But I tried to share my story and to share, you know, but I want to tell that there is hope. You know, the world's a tough place now. But there is hope, and that hope lies in Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you've done a great job in sharing that in your book, and I want folks to be sure to know where to find you and where they can learn more and where they can purchase your book. So give us that information.
They can go to the website. Again, my ministry is The Prodigal One, and it's www.theprodigalone.com, and it's Prodigal is PRODIGALONE.com, theprodigalone.com. So they can order from there or Amazon, which we just did that recently. They can purchase through Amazon, or you can send me an email at johntheprodigalone@gmail.com. The book's $10, and again, I just hope to get the message out, and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I would like to read the last paragraph of your book, if I may, because, again, that was another page I bent back, and you were talking about Lamentations number 3 and hope, and you say, "Yes, God is good all the time. He had answered my prayer to keep my family safe, strong, and together. From a worldly perspective, I had nothing going for me. No job, no money, no house, old cars that could break down any minute, and a boatload of restitution to pay. But I realized I was not living only in the physical world. I had joy. Happiness comes and goes, but joy lasts an eternity. I have been part of a miracle. I am proud of how much God loves all of us, even when we fail. And no matter how many times the devil knocks me down, I will pick myself up, dust myself off, look up to heaven and say, yes, this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." Such a beautiful way to end your book, and such a blessing that I had the opportunity to meet you and share you. Thank you so much for today.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. God bless you.
I hope you enjoyed today's featured author. And to listen to the entire interview, head over to speakuptalkradio.com, where you'll find not only today's author, but over 100 additional writers with plenty of quality books to share with you. That's speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I do believe this is the fastest show in radio. Always goes by so quickly, and I always have so much to share with you. And anyway, I hope that you do find some time or make some time this week to head over to our websites, speakuptalkradio.com and speakupandstayalive.com. So much information on both of those sites for you. Well, until next week, I hope that you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for Informed Choice. The pharmaceutical industry is wreaking havoc on our health. Drugs promoted on TV and magazines. Drugs, drugs, drugs. I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Essential oils are powerful and concentrated plant essences. And just one tiny drop can have noticeable health benefits. No pills and no nasty side effects. Take charge of your health. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.